Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
My name is Patrick J. McGinnis, and I coined the term FOMO. That's short for fear of missing out, and it's why some people end up following the crowd. But we're not like them. We're part of a new species that isn't afraid to do things differently. I call us FOMO sapiens. And this is the show where you'll meet people like us, phenomenal FOMO sapiens, to learn how they find the courage and the ideas to live exceptional lives.
FOMO. FOMO.
Hey everybody, welcome back to FOMO Sapiens, the show for people who don't just follow the crowd, but instead take their own path to success in business and in life. I'm your host, Patrick J. McGinnis, venture capitalist by day, author and podcaster by night, and of course, as you already know, FOMO Sapiens 24/7. Now, I want to talk about the future, where we're going, and one of the things that makes me think about the future is space travel. We have been watching this space race between Richard Branson and Jeff Bezos, and it just feels like rich guys fighting over spaceships. But if you look under the surface, there's actually a lot going on there. And I have a friend from business school who's in the business of space. And what's crazy is when you're in the business of space, everything is on like a 20-year timeline. So you're like, hey, give me your money, investors, see you in 20 years. But actually, that's not always the case. And in fact, one company in particular that I found is doing space kind of right now. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about how one company's building a different kind of space travel company, really kind of space travel for the rest of us, not just the Bransons and the Bezoses. And my guest is Ryan Hartman. He is the president and CEO of Worldview. Prior to joining Worldview, he served as president and CEO of In-Situ, a pioneer in the design, development, and manufacturing of unmanned aircraft systems for intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance in military and commercial applications. Now, Ryan brings over 20 years of experience in unmanned flight systems and aerial remote sensing to Worldview. In addition to his tenure at In-Situ, Ryan previously led Raytheon's Unmanned Systems Directorate of the Advanced Programs Division. That is a mouthful. He is a veteran of the U.S. Air Force and U.S. Navy and a graduate of Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University. And here's what you're going to learn today. First of all, Ryan's going to tell us why he's doing this. What is the purpose? Because he's a very purpose-driven person. Why build a company to take people to space? What is the point of all of that? Then we're going to get into his experience because he comes from sort of like big company land, you know, Raytheon and all these other sort of large businesses. What's it like for him to jump into a space startup? It's a kind of a wild and crazy world. So we'll talk about that. And then finally, he's going to explain the experience that he is giving people, is giving people, and why it's not just about FOMO, but it's also about giving people something meaningful versus just the hype, you know, of this kind of like ridiculous space race that we see. So it's really interesting. If you're trying to build a purpose-driven business, the way Ryan is thinking about it, in a business that takes hundreds of millions of dollars to build, is really fascinating. He's just a total rock star, and you'll see in the conversation, just a very different kind of person from, you know, some of the other things we've had on the show, because just space is just, some say it's the final frontier. Oh God, forgive me for that. All right, now my small ask for you today. We are in the end of the year, the holiday season, lots of gifts to give. So head over to FOMOSapiens.com and buy your loved ones some merch. I promise you it's really nice. I wear mine all the time. Check it out. I promise you will enjoy it. All right. And now on to the interview. As you know, I start every interview with the same question, and Ryan did not escape that question, so I started our interview by asking him this. What's a formative decision you've had to make to get to where you are today?
Well, I love that question, Patrick, and that decision was to dedicate my career to purpose. And somewhere along the way, it really resonated with me, the idea of dedicating one's, you know, gifts, their talents, what have you, to purpose.
I love that. And how do you define purpose?
Well, so it changes for everybody. For me, purpose is all about having a positive impact. You know, and I think what really originated the idea of purpose and the intersection of leadership was watching my grandfather, my grandpa Hartman. He was a cattle rancher in southern Arizona. And I watched how he led his team of ranch hands, cowboys, if you will, with a sense of dedication to them and a sense of dedication to their future. And he often talked about leaving people better than he found them. But then he also was an incredible steward of the land. You know, I watched him be very intentional with how he raised cattle on land, you know, how he managed the land and just always made sure it was vibrant. And I used to have conversations with him just trying to learn, you know, what I could about being in the ranching business. I guess as a child, I always thought I'm going to follow my father and my grandfather into ranching. I don't know if there is a 180 to ranching, but if there is, it's probably space. But anyway, I used to just like have these incredible conversations with him, and it was just fun to learn, you know, how dedicated he was to things like that. So, yeah, I think that's the origin for me of what purpose means.
It's funny, as you're talking about the land, I'm in my head, I'm seeing like a prairie and I'm seeing a horse and, you know, some lassos and things. But I was just thinking exactly that. You've just painted this picture for me that's like all about groundedness in the land. And today we are going to go many, 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 many miles above that into the realm of space. Yes. Because you are the CEO of Worldview and you are in that space. And I was telling you before we started chatting, just so everybody knows, I went to space camp in fifth grade, but I have to be very honest with you. I didn't go because I had some deep and fundamental interest in space. I went because my friends were going and I had FOMO. So even little Patrick made his parents spend a lot of money to go to Huntsville, Alabama. But I am interested in it, of course, as we all are, and it is so much of the future. So talk to us before we get going. Tell us about Worldview. What does Worldview do today, and where are you taking the company?
Well, there's two sides of our business, and I'll start with our purpose, since that's where we started our conversation. But our purpose is to inspire, create, and explore new perspectives for a radically improved future. That's why we exist. And we do so through what we call remote sensing. So using our technologies to gather imagery, data, insights into what's happening on the surface of the Earth. And then separately, we have a space tourism business where we're taking people to the edge of space where what they can experience is viewing the curvature of the Earth, viewing the darkness of space, you know, and really understanding, you know, the Earth from a completely different and inspired perspective. And so that's who we are today. And in the future, you know, we will be the largest space tourism business that exists. And I say that through just the sheer number of people that we aim to take into space, into the stratosphere and beyond. And that's our plans for the future.
Now, you didn't start out in the space world. You were in aerospace, of course. You were president chief executive officer for In Situ, which is a division of Boeing. You were at Raytheon before that. So you came from the bigger, more established players that have like huge CapEx budgets, that have these big relationships, and you left that. And I'm like, you know, which sounds kind of like very cushy in a sense, right? And then you jump into this world where you're raising money. You've already raised over $100 million from investors. You're in this very entrepreneurial environment. And I'm curious, like, what was it that got you to jump into the crazy, insane world of entrepreneurship?
Well, I did start it In Situ. Well, actually, it goes back to, I guess, the beginning of my professional career. You know, I was in the Air Force, and then I was in the Navy. That's probably a topic for another show. After I left the Navy, I joined a really small company called Tiburon. We were a data fusion company. So think of that as being, you know, AI before AI existed. It was all about, you know, taking disparate data and turning it into something useful. And then we got bought by Texas Instruments Defense, and then they got bought by Raytheon. And so now all of a sudden I'm in a big company. And I guess really I grew up inside of that company. But I had joined Tiburon for a reason. And the reason I joined Tiburon is I always felt comfortable working in, you know, smaller enterprises, if you will, smaller teams that had the potential to grow. But I learned some incredibly useful skills in being a part of a very large enterprise. You know, the idea of what it takes to run a company that is predictable and consistent, and the importance of meaningful process, the meaningful procedures. And when I say meaningful, that they actually have to contribute to something good, right? And so over time, it became challenging working in a large company just because at my core, you know, I really wanted to be involved with something small. And so there was this company in situ that was led by Dr. Steve Sliwa. He happened to be the president of the university I went to, Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University. We had stayed in touch, and they had sold the company to Boeing, but we're still operating the company as an independent company. It was a non-fully integrated subsidiary is how they described it. And so, you know, he made an offer for me to come over and potentially, you know, end up on the succession plan to lead the company. And that's exactly how it ended up. And, you know, when I was there, for the entire time that I was there, for I guess about 7-8 years, the company operated as that independent standalone company, and I learned a lot about entrepreneurship in that way. And when I was there, you know, I was often asked to describe what is the relationship with Boeing and how does that work. And I described it just through an analogy that really felt appropriate. And it's around camping. So my family and I, we love camping. And when we go camping, we don't go to campgrounds. We don't go to, established areas. We go out into the wilderness, and we love wilderness camping and just being on our own, whether it be through backpacking or whatever. And running a company like In Situ is exactly like that. Except that you were doing wilderness camping right next door to an REI. Right? And so when you forgot something, or like you needed a skill that you didn't have, you popped over into, you know, REI, or in this case Boeing, and got the tools you needed, got the skills you needed, and then you went right back to roughing it in the wilderness. And I learned a lot about resourcefulness that way. I learned a lot about, you know, organic growth. I learned a lot about the importance of being able to grow organically, but also, you know, what it meant to take risks and take calculated risks. And it really paid off at In Situ when I took over as CEO. And we were about 400 employees doing a little less than $400 million in revenues. And we grew it to 1,500 employees and we're approaching $1 billion in revenue, and all of that through learning about organic growth. But I started to get the same sense, the same feeling of, boy, this is a big company. This is there's a lot of work in feeding the machine that is Boeing, and it was really rewarding. But I felt a need or a desire to get back to purpose and to get back to, you know, leading something that needed to go through growth and needed to cross the chasm. And so I sought that out. I wanted to find a company that I could really establish a purpose around and lead it through purpose and get to the next level.
FOMO. Tudo bem, meus queridos FOMO sapiens? Now that right there was Portuguese. And as you know, I love speaking foreign languages, but I'm not alone. 1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off that list with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, and delivered with conversation-based teaching, so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Now, FOMO sapiens, you know I speak 4 languages, and it takes work to stay on top of them, especially with French. C'est difficile. But with Babbel, I'm able to practice practical conversations that I can actually use in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/FOMO. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/FOMO. That's spelled BABBEL.com/FOMO. Rules and restrictions may apply.
FOMO. Yeah, this analogy of camping, I'm just thinking,
When I was a kid, I grew up in Maine, right? So I camped outside in our lawn, which basically, by the way, is like deep in the woods. But as an adult, I've done a lot of very off the grid kind of stuff in like, you know, Central Asia. You know, you're out in the Tian Shan Mountains and you're like, well, I better not mess up here because like they'll never find me. And you have to go, you have to train near the REI, but you have to go off the path to see the most spectacular vistas and to really find out who you are. And so I love the way you frame that up because I wouldn't have thought about it that way, but you're so right. Now, I want to, before we get into more of the experience, because I do want to just talk about the space travel experience. It's so interesting. I want to understand the tech because, you know, you can't raise over $100 million if you don't have something special that you're doing. So where is the technology and the IP, the intellectual property that you're building in this company?
Well, so it's in a couple different areas, and it really comes down to being able to use our technology, which is stratospheric balloons, right? So these are very large balloons that take instruments up to the edge of space, and so you know our IP is captured in two different fairly broad patents on how to use the technology, and so on the remote sensing side. You'll appreciate this. On the remote sensing side, we have a patent called the whole enchilada, and that patent is to use a stratospheric balloon coupled with a device to carry instruments, etc., and then also a key piece of technology that enables us to navigate in the stratosphere. So one of the things that's I'll get a little bit geeky on you if you don't mind, Patrick, but one of the interesting things in the stratosphere is that there are four directional winds at different altitudes. Now, you know, the stratosphere, it's a very low pressure environment. There's very little oxygen. And so, you know, the movement of air is not, you know, significantly impactful, but it is, but there are these winds that go in these four directionals or in four directions. And so if you can control your altitude, you can go in whatever direction you want. So we designed a solution where we have this lift balloon and then we have this separate balloon that we call a ballast balloon. We pressurize that with air in the stratosphere that creates mass so that it's heavier than the helium and you can descend the balloon and then you release the pressure and it ascends again, right? And so that's a very unique set of technologies that enables you to freely navigate in the stratosphere. And so that's part of our IP portfolio. And then separately, we have a patent on the space tourism side that's called the kitchen sink. So remote sensing is the whole lot on the space tourism side. It's a kitchen sink. So what we do there is we use the same lift technology, the stratospheric balloon, which has been around for ages, but we apply it to flying a space capsule, being able to stay in the stratosphere for a very long period of time, and then using a patented parafoil approach where we can deploy a parafoil in the stratosphere, which enables us to reliably and consistently get to a specific landing site. So the whole thing is very well controlled. The whole thing, the whole entire experience, you launch from a known location, you land in a known location. You're not having to, just use a parachute to come straight down and land wherever you might land. You're not going to be using, you know, the solution to land in water, which is a very, unpredictable and unknown environment. And so, you know, with our patent and our approach, it's entirely controlled through from launch to landing. And so that's where the IP and the patents are applied inside a worldview.
This is so cool. As you're talking, I'm looking at the website for the space tourism. And so this is going to launch in 2024. You can leave from the Grand Canyon, Amazonia, Brazil, Norway, Aurora Borealis. You can do the pyramids in Egypt. You can do the Serengeti. You can go to Mongolia for the Great Wall of China, the Barrier Reef. So like very strategic thinking on how to generate FOMO, my friend. You got things to teach me. And what I want to do now, because I just love, I mean, this is coming down the pike, and I assume you wouldn't put that on your website if you're not pretty sure it's gonna happen. Yes. Let's generate a little FOMO. Walk us through the experience of what it's going to be like to get into one of your capsules and go into the stratosphere. Like, is this, and like, also, I'm going to ask you to like compare that to like, just so we have like a level setting to, you know, all the space race with Bezos and Richard Branson, like how that all compares.
Speaking of FOMO, I'm leaving this podcast to drive to the airport so that I can fly to El Paso, Texas, and drive to Van Horn, Texas, so I can watch the next Blue Origin launch tomorrow morning. So
you just had to show off, didn't you? That's amazing.
But anyway, so you know, I'm not gonna start with entering the capsule, because our experience is so much more than that, Patrick. And there's a reason why we have these seven sites. We call them Seven Wonders of the World Stratospheric Edition. And each one of these sites plays a critical role in the customer experience. And so I'll just use Spaceport Grand Canyon as an example. It's the first one that will be opening. And so the customer experience is not just a flight, but it's a 5-day experience at these locations. And so the intent here is to bring people to someplace like Spaceport Grand Canyon and truly introduce them and immerse them in the area that they're going to be seeing from above, right? So spend some time touring the Grand Canyon, go to Antelope Canyon, go to the Montezuma Valley. We'll have curated experiences where people can sit down with Navajo Nation leaders or Hopi Nation leaders and have a meal with them and learn about the history of Navajo Nation or Hopi Nation. You know, or maybe it's getting on a helicopter and flying to Las Vegas and having an incredible meal one day. But, you know, the whole idea is truly immersing people in these very unique, wondrous places around the world. You know, and the end result of that is, one, is they get to know the area. They understand the fragility of the area. They get to witness the beauty of an area, but they also get to understand the history of it. And you know, think about one day you're standing on the edge of the Grand Canyon. You're seeing this canyon that's more than a mile deep. It's you know, several miles across, and you're just seeing how massive the Grand Canyon is. And then the very next day, you're ascending above it, and you're looking down and seeing how small the Grand Canyon is in the big picture, right? And so so that 5-day experience is really important. On the day of the flight, our passengers, our customers will arrive before sunrise. We'll load them up before sunrise, and then we'll ascend them to the stratosphere, where they'll get to watch the sunrise against the backdrop of the darkness of space, and then look at the sun rising around the curvature of the Earth, right? It's complete blackness behind it. There's the curvature of the Earth. You're watching the sunrise and seeing likely the most spectacular sunrise you've ever seen in your life, just because it's so unique. And so once you're in the stratosphere and you watch the sunrise, the customers will be in the stratosphere for generally 4 to 6 hours on most flights, sometimes a little bit longer, sometimes a little bit shorter. But during that time, they'll be seeing unique things, you know, from the Grand Canyon. Of course, they'll see the Grand Canyon. They'll be able to see the Rocky Mountains. They'll be able to see some of these unique things around the area. But then they'll also be able to see the galaxies, right? So we'll have a telescope on board, and we'll draw their attention to, you know, here it is 10 a.m., broad daylight. Let's look at some stars. Right. Let's look at some unique things that are not obscured by, you know, the light of day or, you know, light pollution in a city. Let's spend some time enjoying the stars. There'll be a bar on board, so those who decide that they want to imbibe in a cocktail will be able to enjoy a cocktail. There'll be a light meal served, and just a time to spend with your fellow passengers in a very unique environment. And then, you know, after the 4 to 6 hours, we'll start our descent, and then we'll fly them back down to our landing sites, and then they'll be picked up and transported back to the spaceport, where they will then have an opportunity to have a meal, right? And one of the things that's really important in this experience, Patrick, is, you know, I'll say the integration side of it, right? The understanding, what did I just experience? Because this is going to be a peak experience for people. And so I envision, you know, almost a Jeffersonian style meal, right? Where it is a a single conversation that's taking place with your fellow passengers, talking about the highlights, talking about, you know, what it means for you, and doing that over a curated meal in a private setting where you can talk about, you know, what you just experienced. And from there, you know, they can spend a few more days at the spaceport and take advantage of the spaceport itself, where there will be virtual reality experiences, you know, fine dining, excursions, and those kinds of things as well. So that is the experience. It is by far the most unique tourism experience that I believe exists today.
FOMO. FOMO.
Yeah, what I love about that, because as you talk about this is tourism, but this isn't like sightseeing. It's not, let me check this off the box. And I think a lot of times when I've thought about space tourism, the way it's been framed up is like, this really rich person wants to show off, versus these people want to have a meaningful experience that actually teaches them about our world and then empowers them to maybe go out and do some good with what they've learned.
Yeah.
How does this contrast with like the Bezos and the Richard Branson kind of stuff? I'm curious.
Well, so it comes down to four beliefs. When we were designing our space tourism business, you know, I just spent some time alone thinking about what does space tourism mean, and what should we define as a space tourism solution? And I think more than anything, as a child, you know, I was fascinated by looking at the stars. I was fascinated by reading books, and I read this quote, and it's attributed to Plato, and the quote goes something like, "For one to truly understand the earth upon which we live, they must first rise to the very edges of the atmosphere beyond, for only then will they understand," right? And I was always just like captivated by that quote. It's such an interesting quote to be, you know, spoken so long ago. And I've always wondered, like, how did that become something that someone like Plato understood? And so that quote has always stuck with me, and I use that in defining what our space tourism business should be. And ultimately, what I came up with is these four fundamental beliefs of what space tourism is all about, at least for us. And it's that space tourism is about place, it's about time, it's about attainability, and it's about accessibility. And I think if you talk through those four things, those four beliefs, it really does contrast the solution. Now, let me start by saying I'm a huge fan and a huge believer in any medium possible to deliver people, to deliver humans an opportunity to view our Earth and experience the overview effect, as it's called, you know, the opportunity to see the Earth as being something bigger than themselves, seeing it as a living organism, seeing the Earth without borders, seeing the Earth without race. You know, any way that you can do that, I'm a firm believer in and a huge fan of. That said, you know, I felt like there was a different way to do this, and it starts with the place, right? And I just walked through, you know, what the customer experience is like at our spaceports. And the reason that was important is when you talk to astronauts who have experienced the overview effect, one of the things that is common is it is often triggered when you see something you recognize, right? When you first enter, you know, an environment where you're viewing the Earth as a planet, you're likely recognizing it from pictures you've seen and how it's been described before. But it's not until you see something that you recognize and that you truly understand, you know, that you have an emotional reaction, right? Now, all of a sudden, you're seeing the Grand Canyon, you're seeing how small it is, and you're recognizing, I was just there, I was in the Grand Canyon, right? And look how small it is, and look at it, you know, in contrast to the rest of the Earth and against the backdrop of the darkness of space, you know. And so place became really important, both from a customer experience perspective, but also from a business perspective, Patrick. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that was important to us is, you know, that we establish a business that can be scaled, right? That there's a clear pathway to scalability. And one of the ways to do that is to create more supply, right? And you can't just create more supply at the Grand Canyon. You know, I felt like we had to have repeat customers. And so one way to create repeat customers is to offer very unique experiences, you know, in different locations. So place became really important. And then it was about time. Time on the ground, getting to know the area, and then time above. So, you know, if you look at the current solutions that exist today, you know, and with Blue Origin and Virgin Galactic, you spend 3 to 4 minutes at Apogee. So, you know, they're going into the upper stratosphere and a little bit above, but you're spending 3 to 4 minutes there. I don't know. I guess for me, I find it very difficult to imagine that everybody can fully understand what they're seeing in 3 to 4 minutes, especially when you introduce the phenomena of weightlessness mm-hmm. at the same time, right? You know, I was watching the very first flight that Blue Origin did last year, watching it just, you know, completely captivated by the entire experience. And they had, you know, the live shot from inside the capsule, and they were throwing Skittles back and forth. And I found myself like screaming at the screen, like, look outside. So there needs to be a time component while you're up there, right? Yeah. To be able to truly understand what you're seeing, take it in, you know, and let it sink in and to form multiple lasting memories, right? I want it to be memories of viewing the Grand Canyon, viewing the Rockies, viewing these other things, maybe seeing a weather phenomena while you're up there, you know, deliver multiple, lasting memories for people from above. And then the last two beliefs are that it has to be attainable and accessible, attainable being from a price perspective. You know, you can't go on any of the other solutions for less than $450,000, upwards of $27 million for one ticket that was sold. And that's great. And it's for those who can afford it. You know, when we think about why we exist, that we exist to inspire, create, and explore new perspectives for a radically improved future. A radically improved future comes when you can deliver this to as many people as possible, right? I truly believe that people have a profound peak experience that for some will shift their behaviors, right? That they will find a newfound respect for our planet and want to do something about it.
And where would that be priced out at? What's your sense of that?
$50,000 is where we started our pricing, and you know, and we're constantly looking at how to maintain a level of attainability through pricing, and then find other unique ways to deliver this to as many people as possible. So one example is our very first flight will go to an organization called Space for Humanity. And Space for Humanity goes out and finds people deserving of and or can have a positive impact through an experience of going to space. And so our very first flight we sold to Space for Humanity, which means the first 8 customers will not have paid a dime for their tickets, right? And we'll do many more flights with Space for Humanity. But the point being is we'll constantly be creative in finding ways to deliver this to as many people as possible. And then the last is accessibility. You know, when we thought about space tourism, you know, I think about people like my Uncle Frank, who was, I think he was probably the first person I ever had a conversation with about space, like, you know, just my curiosity around what are the stars and what is space. You know, as a young child, it's hard to like wrap your head around, you know, what is up there. And my Uncle Frank, I think more than anything, you know, just enlightened me to the beauty of space. But then later, you know, I remember being on a sailboat with him once and we were looking at the stars and him talking about it, you know, how cool it would be to go to space. Mm-hmm. And then later in his life, he ended up with having ALS and he was wheelchair bound for the last portions of his life. And, you know, I think about, you know, had we had our solution available in time, even for my Uncle Frank, space tourism would have been possible, right? In a wheelchair, coming aboard and experiencing space, you know, for someone who thought that you know, they would have been locked out. And I think about my Uncle Frank and think about how many other people are like my Uncle Frank that can experience viewing the beauty of our Earth and delivering it in a way that that makes it a possibility when they thought it was impossible.
It sounds like an amazing experience, one that's really well thought out, and that I would love to. Maybe the founder of FOMO could be one of those recipients of a spot on the plane at some point if it works out. But I will tell you, and I've read so much about this overview effect that you mentioned and the notion that it changes you forever and that you see the world in a different way once you have experienced it and that you realize that, you know, we're all in this together. So I just want to thank you for being here. Now, folks, if you want to learn more about this company, go to worldview.space or look for Worldview Space on all the socials. You can find out a lot more. Ryan Hartman, CEO of Worldview Space, thank you so much for being here.
It's my pleasure, Patrick. Thanks for having me, and thanks for all you do on FOMO Sapien.
FOMO.
If you like today's show, please be sure to rate it and recommend it to your friends. And as always, you can find me on Instagram at Patrick J. McGinnis, on Twitter at PJ McGinnis, and on the web at FOMOSapiens.com or PatrickMcGinnis.com, where you can get all kinds of free resources to live a more decisive and entrepreneurial life. FOMO Sapiens is recorded in New York City. Theme music is by Mike McGinnis, and editing and post-production is by Josh Elstro. If you like today's show, please be sure to rate it and recommend it to your friends. And as always, you can find me at FOMOSapiens.com and at PatrickMcGinnis.com. To advertise on FOMO Sapiens, reach out to contact@FOMOSapiens.com. FOMO.